going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan, always live on the free Odyssey app.
It was the weekend. Now it's not. Now it's Monday. The weekends go by fast. I got Saturday was like the quintessential, you know, just miserable rain out where it was somewhat nice. Saturday was the opening day for Little League with my sons. And, you know, I'm coaching the team. So you meet somewhere. We walk around the neighborhood. We walk into the ballpark. We sit on the field. They speak for an obnoxious amount of time. They thank anyone who's ever had anything to do with the Little League. It was, you know how it goes. But it was nice. It's always nice. It's a great day. And there was like a slight rain during that. But it wasn't so bad early in the morning. Our game wasn't scheduled until 6 p.m. So you go there, the parade starts at 10 a.m. It's over by 11:30, 12. You head home. I had 6 hours with a rained-out Yankee game on Saturday to kill with the kids. But it was relatively nice. We were supposed to get rain, and rain was holding off. Didn't rain all day. We were outside riding bikes a little bit, doing things outside. Whole day, nothing. We get to the ballpark at 6 o'clock. As I'm driving there, the most ominous clouds over the field you've ever seen. Like, I was wearing sunglasses, and I could hardly see. It was so dark outside. We get on the field. We warm up instantly. Just an absolute downpour there. We got caught in. Of course, you know, then you got 11 or 12, 6, 7-year-olds who find it hilarious that it's pouring rain and you're trying to keep them in the dugout and they're screaming and they're laughing and they're running around. No, put that down. You can't hold a bat in here. Rain everywhere. Oh, look, if you stand here, you get off the roof of the dugout. It goes right down your back. And I'm like, get it. Trying to wrangle in 11 7-year-olds who find, you know, rain fascinating and know that it's like annoying us coaches and we're trying to keep them in and we're seeing how long the rain's going to be. And then it got to a point where it was just a muddy mess. And you know, how long is it going to be before we have darkness? It's 6 o'clock the game is scheduled for. I mean, so we had to bang that. We were there for 10 minutes, just long enough to get absolutely drenched by rain and then go home. It was miserable. But it was the weekend. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Obviously, I started talking about this Carter asking for Lawrence Taylor's number, which I just, look, it's become a thing as we saw Warren Moon, right? Someone just reminded me, and I knew about it, but that Tennessee and Cam Ward is going to wear number one, which was Warren Moon's number. Now, the difference there is, and forget the level of play. Warren Moon's a great quarterback. Don't get me wrong. Is he Lawrence Taylor? I don't think I'd put him in that class, but still a great quarterback with his number retired. But he actually never wore a Tennessee Titan uniform. He was a Houston Oiler. So it's a little bit different because he never actually wore that uniform for that city. So I would feel a little bit better about it. But still, why are we asking Warren Moon to give up his number? Why are we asking Lawrence Taylor to give up his number? Stop. Like, listen, and both of those are warranted. Both of those guys are warranted. But, like, if you want to have a conversation about retiring less numbers and making it harder to get numbers retired, I'm all for it. But once you do it, you do it. And that was the one thing I said last year about Malik Nabers. Not that I mind it. It actually, in that scenario, it benefited the history of the Giants and Ray Flaherty, and people actually talked about him, and I felt like he was probably a name not many Giant fans were aware of, and so it brought light to him, and like it actually benefited the whole situation, so it made sense. But it creates a slippery slope of, well, hey, now it's the norm. I can ask for it. Wait, well, like Abdul Carter said, all he can say is no. Like, no, this is not like, hey, have the courage to ask that girl out. What's the worst that happened? She says no. Okay, like. That's not this. What's the worst that could happen? Lawrence Taylor says no. Well, I mean, I guess, yeah, but you're also putting him in a weird spot. And maybe there are fans out there going, geez, LT, a little selfish. I mean, have some, you know, who cares? It's just a number. Like, I don't know how many people feel that way. I certainly don't, but you put him in a tough spot, you ask him that. Because it's so self-serving. You know, retired numbers, warranted or not, it's like a sell. It's like, oh, you want my number? I mean, I don't know. It's like, probably not, but okay. But Lawrence Taylor, hell no. Good for you, LT. And I wouldn't want that for Abdul Carter anyway. Why would you want to put that target on your back? Why do you want to say I'm the next Lawrence Taylor? Just be the next you, man. Let's go to Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stuart?
Morning, Chris.
Good. How are you, man? What are you putting stuff in the dishwasher?
No. Just get ready for the gym.
Oh, nice.
I agree with. Why would you want to put, like you just said, why would you put that target on your back?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Mm-mm.
Oh my! I'm glad he said no. I'm glad he said no. That number's retired. It's like somebody walking into the stadium and say, we want number 7.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, it ended up not being true, but there were reports that Clint Frazier asked for number 7. And then ended up wearing number 77. Remember, people flipped out that he asked for number 7. Now, again, this is a different, like, they went through, he went to LT and asked. It's not like he just went to the Giants and said, hey, give me 56. Like, he did ask Lawrence Taylor. You know, the Giants last year with Ray Flaherty went to the Flaherty family. You know, the Tennessee Titans, I just mentioned Warren Moon. They did go to Warren Moon. That story was just, you know, Clint Frazier asked the clubhouse guy, hey, just give me number 7. Like, it was almost like half the story was he wanted Mickey Mantle's number. The other half was he was unaware that Mickey Mantle wore number 7 and that it was retired. Like, that was part of the story. But, yeah, this is, he's well aware of the history. I'm sure he knows very well who Lawrence Taylor is. And, I mean, he wants to, and thank you for the call, Stu. He wants to be a part of Giants' legacy. He wants to come here and be the next great player for this franchise, and I appreciate that. But you don't have to wear number 56 to do it. Let's go to Eric in Ronkonkoma. What's up, Eric?
Hey, C-Mac. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
You know, before I get to my next point real quick, did you get any lightning or anything with that rain the other day? Because we got absolutely slammed over here about 8 o'clock.
Yeah, no, and once you get hit with the lightning, you can't play for 30 minutes. So it was like no matter what happens, it was just a disaster, yeah. And we got absolutely drenched. And, of course, you know, my walking through the field, my sneakers are completely soaked. They're sitting in the garage with towels in them. Like, yeah, just a disaster.
Yeah, you got 5 years worth of mud now that you got to take
off. That's it, yeah. And the car gets all filthy and, like, just dealing. They're all screaming at the top of their lungs. I'm like, God, stop. They're all laughing and, you know, oh, we got to get our bags because you hang your bags on the fence of the dugout and they're all getting wet. Oh, we got to get our bags.
I remember those days.
I was like, oh, my God.
So I went to the Gio's fundraiser yesterday for Boomer.
Yes.
You know, the guest bartending and everything. And, you know, the, you know, the, I'd say 90% of the TVs there had the Knicks game on, so obviously we're watching that.
Sure.
And, you know, but so I had an interesting encounter with none other than Brett.
Yeah, I heard he was there. So, I heard he was there. Yeah, I actually got a funny story about that in a second, I'll tell you, but go ahead.
So I you know, I go in there and I see G behind the, Gio behind the bar, and hey, how you doing? And he's like, guess who's here? I'm like, who? He goes, Brett. I'm like, get the heck out of here. And sure enough, he pointed him out and he went over, talked to him, and he's only half bad, I got to say.
I'm sure in person, you know, he's a very nice guy. He's determined to be a jerk on the phone. That's all.
His wife and my wife were outside talking, and I'm like, I went up to her when I met her, and I said, "Boy, you must have a one way ticket right to the Pearly Gate."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she laughed, of course, you know, and everything. But I mean, that's although I did verify the 11 social media groups is a real thing. So,
I'm sure it is.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously the majority of what was going on there, everybody was watching the Knicks game. And
sure.
It was, you know, the level of frustration everybody, you know, in the second half when they can't hit a bucket and the defense is falling apart, and I mean it's just the play is so inconsistent. It just makes you know it's pretty obvious now they're going to get past Detroit, but you know, I mean, it just really makes you wonder. I mean, are they going to be able to do anything against Boston? I mean, you know, Boston has their mind to it. I mean, it feels like they're just going to blow them out of the water with, you know, how inconsistent the Knicks are. And does that make you feel any sort of good, you know, knowing that you got past the first round but got blown out of the second? I mean,
and thank you for the call, Eric. No, it won't make me feel better that they won this series if they get blown out against Boston. But, again, I am seeing a toughness here. And I, as bad as the Pistons played offensively in the first half of this particular game, I feel like the Pistons have put on a really good showing. I think they played really well. And I'm not saying they've played as well as Boston, and Boston presents a bunch of different problems than the Pistons present. But I think the Knicks have had to like dig deep and find ways to win these games. I think the way the Pistons are playing is actually going to help them come the Boston series. Now, that doesn't mean they'll beat them, clearly, but I mean, yeah, I look at it. There's two ways to look at it, I suppose. Wow, they're having a real tough time with Detroit. Clearly, they're going to get blown out by Boston. And I don't know if I'd necessarily tell you that. Not that I'll ever say they're not going to get blown out by Boston. I don't know. But I don't think you can read too much into how this series has gone with Detroit and just say, hey, this should have been a hell of a lot easier. I mean, they're up 3-1. I mean, it's not. I know this was a tight game, and they've all been tightly contested games. They have won 3 of them. And I feel like this has been a pretty good test, and I think it might actually help them moving forward. I don't necessarily look at this and go, wow, they're having a tough time with the Pistons. Wait until the Celtics show up. I know many people want to do that. I'm going to tell you, I think this has been a better test, and I'm actually glad that it's gone this way if they end up winning the series, because I think, you know, defensively, I don't know how much tougher the Celtics can be on them defensively, or how much more physical the Celtics are going to play. I we'll see. And then to Brett Long Island, I have a funny story, is that Gio texted me today. I got a text from Giannotti, and it's a picture with him and some guy. And I can tell it's at the Portly Villager, because I went to the Portly Villager after we had our event at the Islanders game at UBS Arena, and we went to the Portly Villager after, so I've been to the Portly Villager, and he told the story, and we lost. I kept getting my ass kicked in cornhole. So Gio sends me a picture of him and this guy at the Portly Villager. No text, doesn't say anything. It's just the picture of him and this guy. And I thought it was one of the guys who kicked my ass in cornhole. I mean, it was a long time ago. It was at night. He vaguely looked. I was like, that's who I thought it was. There was no context, so it had to be. I knew who the guy was. Otherwise, he'd specify who it was. He just sent me a picture. And I don't know if his phone, I don't know if he intended to send a text, and I didn't get it, but I just got a picture. So I thought it was one of his buddies who's like the best cornhole player I've ever seen and kicked the crap out of me. And so I thought that's who he was. It was just like a, hey, remember this guy? He kicked our ass in cornhole, kicked your ass in cornhole. So I just wrote back, tell him I'm coming for him. I thought it was the guy who beat me in cornhole. Now I found out when I came here that it was Brent in Long Island. Either way, the text works. But yeah, Brett apparently was sad. But yeah, Gio sent me a picture of him and Brett, but with no text, no telling me this is Brett in Long Island. I've never met Brett in Long Island. I don't know what he looks like. So I, with no name of who it is, I assumed it should have been someone I knew, and I didn't recognize him. So I kind of saw, I just thought, oh, maybe that's the guy who beat me in cornhole. So I got to talk to Gio next time. Tell me who it is. I guess I could have asked who's that. And maybe when I said, tell him I'm coming for him, Gio assumed I knew who it was. One of those happy accidents. But I got a picture, no text, no, hey, this is Brett. Just sent me a picture. And I said, all right, tell him I'm coming for him. I thought it was the cornhole guy. Little did I know it was Brett in Long Island, the infamous. 888-808-1019. Aaron in Brooklyn. What's up, Aaron?
Yeah, the whole Lawrence Taylor story.
Yes.
It's more than just that. It's the whole, the NIL is getting to their heads. They're all self-centered that they don't think about anything else but themselves. You see it with the guys celebrating after first downs while they're down by 10 points. You see it with guys, no one can stay on a team. They're switching teams every other year. No one care. They just care about themselves.
Yeah, I think that's an extremely narrow way to look at it. An extremely cynical way to look at it. I don't think that Abdul Carter is that this means, you know, how selfish he is. I mean, I guess it's not really so much selfish. It's not self-aware, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if that's parsing words. But I don't. And celebrating first downs, that's a hell. That happened a hell of a lot before NIL deals. I mean, Jeremy Shockey used to point for first downs no matter what the score was a long time ago. So, like, the idea that that's new, it's not. And free agency isn't new either. So I don't think it's that these players have made more money in college. Let's be honest, guys were probably making money in college before the NIL deals. I don't think that's it. I think now it's more of a trendy thing to do. I don't think it was an option. I don't think players thought that it was an actual thing. And now we've seen it a couple times, and specifically with the Giants, we saw it with last year, Malik Nabers and Ray Flaherty. And maybe a young kid who knows of Lawrence Taylor, but never saw Lawrence Taylor play, I'm sure he knows the name and everything, but to him it's like, hey, Ray Flaherty was a retired number, Lawrence Taylor's a retired number. They did it last year for Malik. Maybe they'll do it this year for me. I don't know. The difference is Malik Nabers just wanted to wear the number one because that's the number he wanted, and it just happened to be retired in Ray Flaherty. I know he wears 11. It's not like he asked for, if he would have asked for Phil Simms' number, it would have been more about, hey, I just love the number 11. It's what I've always worn. You know, can we figure something out? But specifically to ask Lawrence Taylor, you are more aware of Lawrence Taylor. You understand how great of a defensive player he was. You understand you play the same position. You understand that you're trying to join that lineage of great Giant players, linebackers, edge rushers, whatever you want to call it. Like, it's not just asking for your number that happens to be retired by this organization. You're specifically asking for the greatest defensive player in the franchise's history's number. And arguably, and from my mind, he is the greatest defensive player in the history of the NFL. It's a bit bold. It's certainly bold for someone who's never played a snap in the NFL. It's a bit bold. Dominic in North Carolina. What's up, Dom?
Yes. Good morning, Chris. You are the most erudite, sophisticated, reasonable and reasoned host on WFAN by far.
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you.
I mean that. And your call screener informed me already that you made the point earlier that I've been harping on all weekend, but has gotten very, very little play with Sanders, which is that part of the reason for his dramatic fall is that he didn't have an agent.
Yeah.
And he had nobody working as a go-between, and that just has, that aspect of it hasn't been covered at all. I mean, had he had an agent, he might not have come out, because those guys go in between and they tell you what they gauge the NFL's interest. And the thing about Sanders is he had a year of eligibility left.
Yes.
And, you know, the thing about the draft, but, and you talk about NIL, mm-hmm. a lot of these kids in the lower rounds, and Sanders too, they'd have made more money staying in school.
Right.
Because the bonus that they're getting is lower than they would get with the NIL.
Right.
Anyway,
well, that's true. Well, certainly, yeah. Now as a fifth-round pick, yeah, I think the bonus is less than $1 million, and he was making, he could make as much as $6 million staying in Colorado. So, yeah, he's definitely taking a pay cut. There's no doubt about that. But the thing with the agent is if you hire the agent, it makes it more difficult to go back to college and not come out to the draft. So it's like for you to say he'd hire an agent and the agent would tell him not to. I don't think many agents are in the business of not making money.
I was under the impression that just the mere fact of hiring an agent, perhaps I'm thinking of basketball, but I thought the mere fact of hiring an agent didn't negate your eligibility and let you back in.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that works, but let's forget that for a second. The other thing is, I up until these meetings and everything, like, I don't think he was projected to be a first-round pick. Like, I don't know how much more. He's played a lot of college football. Like, he's turned around two programs. He started and played a ton of college football. I don't know what he gets. I don't know what he benefits other than the paycheck, because you're right. If he's drafted in the fifth round, it's like a $500,000 advance, and then he gets the salary or whatever. So, yeah, other than the paycheck, I don't know if he benefits from going back to school. The draft next year has more, and thank you for the call, Dom. The draft next year has more good quarterbacks in it. It's a more prestigious quarterback draft. So I don't think it's going to help him in his draft stock, even if he goes out and has another good year. Like, I mean, he's had good years. And he was projected to be a top pick by a lot of people. Like, I'm sorry. We would have heard if the NFL circles were this down on him. No matter what Mel Kiper, McShay, Baldinger, whoever you want to say, had him graded as, if there was real noise about many teams inside the NFL grading him as a fifth-round pick, we would have heard about it. This guy was a first-round pick. This entire draft process, he was a first-round pick. There's reports now that the Giants still had him as their best quarterback. A lot of people in the room that are still there today and into the draft process were still kind of making the case to draft him third overall. This is not a guy who, hey, if you had an agent reading the tea leaves, you would have realized you were getting drafted in the fifth round. Like, I don't think that would have saved him. I really don't. It would have helped him in the process to make better decisions, to put himself in a position not to fall into the fifth round. An agent would have said, you can't go into these meetings with your headphones blaring. You can't go into these meetings whether or not you think they're going to draft you, and whether or not you think you're going to fall to them or they're interested in you, it doesn't matter. You have to go into every meeting with the utmost respect for the organization. This stuff gets around. People will hear about these meetings. You need to treat, if you are meeting someone inside the NFL, you need to treat it as if you're trying to sell yourself to them, or you're trying to help them understand why you're the guy, no matter who it is. Even in years down the road, those teams or people you're meeting with now might be with this team or another team and look to acquire you in free agency or trade. Like, this is your NFL livelihood, man. Always put your best foot forward. You never know how anyone, whether that team specifically or anyone in the room you're talking to, will be involved in another situation, even if it's years down the road, to pick you up in free agency or trade for you or whatever the case may be. Like, show respect at every moment and take everything seriously. And I feel like there was nobody there. An agent would have clearly done that. And whether or not his father did or not, it sounds like he didn't. Or like he needed someone to say, hey, look, this is a business. You are a businessman and you are your product. And you don't just because you don't think this person's buying, doesn't mean you don't take the meeting seriously. He needed someone for that, not to tell him, hey, you're going in the fifth round, go back to school. Like, I don't think that's why he needed an agent. But, yeah, I mean, all of that played the role in why he fell. And the other thing is, too, like, and me and Fleeks are talking about, he brought up a good point, because I mentioned, like, once it gets past the point of being the starter, like, once you get past the point of, well, now someone's using a first or second round pick on you, which deems they are going to at least give you an attempt to be the starting quarterback of the franchise. They've taken a premium pick for you, and you are going to get at least a crack at it. Once you get past that point and you're talking about third and fourth round and you're a backup at that point, then it becomes a little bit of a headache and you're like, well, how much do I really want to risk him being a malcontent or unhappy and pissed off at even me for passing him up over the first three rounds? Like, does it make sense to bring him in now as someone, as a backup? Like that whole thing, we talked about how that might have played into it once it got past the second round. Well, does it make sense in the third or fourth? The other thing is a lot of these teams, not only did he not treat them in some of these meetings as earnestly as he should have, once you get past a certain number, a lot of these teams might not have thought Shedeur Sanders was going to be there and didn't do work on him. Like teams, like I've mentioned the Miami Dolphins a couple times. Again, me and Fleeks are talking about it. Like just the idea of how I think Tua's a good comp. I don't know if he's as good as Tua or whatever, but it's a good comp, right? A very accurate pocket presence quarterback. Who's, you know, accurate, put the ball where he needs to put it on time. He could run that Miami offense. It seems to me that would be a good backup as opposed to Zach Wilson. But again, does Miami think he's getting him? How much work did Miami do on him? How much work did these teams do on him? I don't know. If you don't need a quarterback necessarily, where you might consider him in the third round, right? You have a starter in Tua. You're trying to improve this team. You don't necessarily want to take a quarterback in the first two rounds. You want to take someone that can help this team right now because you're chasing something with Tua as long as he's healthy. But then you get into the third, fourth round where Sanders might have made sense, but you never figured he'd get there and you didn't put any work into it. And these teams didn't do a deep dive on Sanders. And now they're like, well, I didn't really put work into him and everybody else was passing on him. So I guess I'm going to pass on him. Like, it was just a perfect storm to get him from a top three pick to a top 10 pick, to a top 25 pick, to a first round pick, to a fifth round pick. Like, that's where he went. He was without question to me and to everyone a top three pick. When this whole thing started, he was a top three pick. Whether he deserved that or not, that was the consensus. Then he was certainly a top 10 pick. He wasn't getting past the Saints at 9. Then he was a first round pick. He's not getting past the Steelers at 21. And he became a fifth-round pick. We've never seen anything like it. We have never seen a fall from grace like we did with Shedeur Sanders. And there's a million reasons for it. A million. But it's not just talent. And it might not even just be his attitude. His attitude, his father, everything. Everything.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung on. There it goes. Deep left, it is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 338, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Talked a lot of Knicks to open the show. We've gotten into the draft here. A lot of Shedeur Sanders just because, you know, we'll get more into the Giants. We have plenty of time to do Giants and Jets draft. We will do it. But that should, I mean, the Shedeur Sanders story has been, I mean, and then you get the pranking and, you know, Jeff Ulbrich and his son Jax is the guy behind it. Imagine if he was still the Jets defensive coordinator and as opposed
or
to
head
being
coach.
The Atlanta, or the head coach, obviously, yeah. But I'm saying he was still with the team. Can you imagine the story here would be here if he left his computer open or left the screen on or whatever, and his son was able to get these phone numbers. And apparently, Tyler Warren, the tight end out of Penn State, who the Jets passed on at 7, apparently there's reports that he was pranked as well. Now, I don't know if there's no video of that one, but he was pranked as well, and they believe it's from the same number. They think Ulbrich, when the Jets were on the clock, they called Warren and pretended to be the Jets. All right, that's messed up, man. But you imagine, I mean, Ulbrich looks terrible that he was able to get, you know, either hacked or left it open, laying around for his son to pick up and make prank phone calls with. I mean, this guy going to turn in, is Jack's going to have a Jerky Boys career? I was listening to, like 90s. I said something about, I was like, you know, play 90s, whatever, in the car. And an Adam Sandler song came up, and I started thinking about comedy stuff from when I was a kid. And I actually made my wife listen to a couple of Jerky Boys calls. But yeah, I mean, that's brutal. And he's not a young kid. What's the deal with these kids getting involved? Obviously, Joe Shane's son putting out an Instagram story of Jackson Dart highlights, which obviously turned out to be accurate, or at least that was, you know, the guy they wanted. He's younger, though. Was he? Is he 19 or 21? I thought I saw it too.
So Jax Ulbrich, I saw 21. Yeah. Carson Shane is still a kid.
Yeah, he's still a kid. And he didn't do anything too bad. I mean, this is, not again, it's not illegal, but it's messed up.
And right, Carson Shane didn't do anything that is, you know, slightly victimizing anybody in any way.
No, it was a victimless, unless you want to, you know, say the idea that it tipped the Giants' hand, but I don't even know.
And when you say, you know, young kids make mistakes, they don't understand the reach of social media, you can understand that with somebody his age.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think that maybe the idea that they tipped their hand on Jackson Dart made them trade up into the first round? You think they'd sit there and wait? No, I don't know. People get mad. Like, a bunch of people are saying to me, like, oh, why not just take, I heard Gio, too. He's going to be there in the second round. You don't know that. They don't know that. And there were reports from Adam Schefter, from a bunch of places, that Jackson Dart spent a bunch of time with the Rams. Now, yes, since Connor Hughes and others have come out and saying that they weren't interested in Jackson Dart, they don't know. The Giants don't know that. Connor Hughes didn't make that report before the draft. All they know is that they had a long meeting with him, and they're picking they needed a quarterback. They wanted him, and they weren't taking chances. I applaud it. The idea, oh, you could have stepped back and got him in the second round. Who knows? What if he got picked off? What if someone else got him? Who knows? The Cleveland Browns met with him. The Rams met with him. Who knows? And maybe they tipped their hand, and someone who wanted him might jump up in front of the Giants. I don't know. I have no problem giving up 2 third round picks to get the quarterback they believe in. I have zero issue with it. And they got the extra fifth year. I know it cost them 2 third round picks. I get it. But they got, for a quarterback they're not going to play in year one, they got an extra year of him. I think that's valuable. I think that's extremely valuable. Is it as valuable as 2 third round picks? Maybe not. I don't know. But it's valuable. So I have no problem trading those 2 third round picks to get the guy they wanted. None. And anybody, oh, you could have had him in the second round. You could, maybe, maybe not. I tell you, I'm much happier they got him than sitting would I feel better about maybe missing out on him to hold on to 2 third round picks, one of them being the compensatory 99th pick at the back end of the third round? No, I don't mind. I'm glad they did it, in fact. I'm glad we have the fifth year for him. That might prove to save him a lot of money. 888-808-1019. So we talked a lot about Shador, a lot about Carter looking for LT's number. We're going to get to the baseball and Devin Williams and the worst loss of the season by far for the New York Mets, who are still 10 games over 500, have an opportunity to salvage the 4-game set tonight. And despite having a miserable game, blowing a 6-run lead in the 7th inning, and being unable to drive in a run with second and third nobody out in the 9th for insurance, and all of the bullpen issues, they continue to get good start after good start after good start. It's hard to lose. It's hard to go on a losing streak with the way they're pitching in the rotation. 888-808-1019. Ralph in Long Beach. What's up, Ralph?
What's going on? I was waking up, and I hear you talking about the Carter thing. I had to put my tailored my Lawrence jersey on before my ride to the boardwalk to get my McDonald's with the pancakes. But come on.
I think McDonald's calls them hotcakes.
Yeah, but I get the extra hotcakes, you know,
there
and
you
I go to the gym. And I get the extra hotcakes for the... And plus, I get the senior coffee, see, back for 50 cents. Double it up.
Senior coffee for 50 cents. Look at you. You finally made it.
And you can bring it back.
That's the bad. Listen, no. There's nothing better.
I need the energy.
That's what I'm looking forward to the most about getting old, the 50-cent coffee and the half-price movie theater tickets. I cannot wait to go see Minecraft and scream Chicken Jockey at the top of my lungs for half-price.
There's so many people who go, are you sure you gave me this? Stop complaining. I'll give you the 50 cents. Stop complaining. I'll give you the 50 cents. Don't be arguing. When you get older, all of a sudden you're getting irritated.
Right.
It's the 50 cents. No, don't worry about it. But yeah,
and plus, let's be honest, you could say you gave them the 50 cents and then act all confused, and they're not going to yell at you. But I gave you the 50 cents. That's all.
Yeah, I know. It's a CD. I didn't get the refill, too. It's unbelievable. I get the energy. I get my bike and I ride back. You know, the boardwalk is amazing in Long Beach. But I'll tell you, I got my jersey on it. There's no reason that car could go in and do that. I don't know what the heck happened. But I want to talk about the steal of the draft for the Giants. They get about this Scatterboo.
Cam Scatterboo, running back at Arizona State.
I love
this guy.
He's like the Larry Zonka. I saw this guy at my son's lives over there in Tempe. I'm like, this guy is a beast, and his attitude, C-Mac, he's a winner.
Yep.
He's a locker room guy. And when he played against Texas, he wouldn't go down.
No, he had a great game.
And whatever they use him at, I'm going to tell you, this guy's a beast. What do you think about him?
Yeah, listen, I think it's a great pick in the fourth round. That's where you select running backs. I mean, that's where you take a chance on running backs in the fourth round. Because you can find great players. Is he Saquon Barkley? Maybe not. Probably not. But I think he's going to be a very serviceable running back, and you tag him up with Tracy. You've got, I don't know about Thunder and Lightning, but this guy's definitely Thunder, man. He is low to the ground. He has, he lays the wood. He is physical. They ran the offense through him in Arizona State. I mean, I think, you know, he's tough to get down, low center of gravity. Elusive for a guy as physical as he is, he can be elusive. I think it's a really good pick. I'll be honest with you, I love the pick. A lot of people are excited about him. He did put on a show in the bowl game against Texas. You're right. It was it's a good pick, and I think they're going to try and run the football. And they have two young running backs right now, and that's where you want to be in the NFL. They have a tandem. They're both young. Last year, this side of Tampa Bay, they had the best rookie running back in the league in Tracy. He put up very similar numbers that Saquon Barkley did with the Giants. Not with the Eagles, I'm aware of that, 2,000 yards. But if you look at Saquon Barkley's last year with the Giants and you look at Tracy's year, it's not all that different. So they've got two young, really talented running backs. They've got an all-world number one wide receiver at the beginning of his career. They got a young tight end in Theo Johnson. I think there's a chance the Giants are going to be a hell of a lot better than people think. Robert in New London. What's up, Robert?
Hey, Chris. How's it going, buddy?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. It harkens back to the age of Theodore Roosevelt. Walk tall and carry a big stick, because this Giants defense...
Speak softly and carry a big
stick. This Giants... Okay. Yeah, thank you.
You're right.
It's
the erudite in me.
Say, you know, you learn something new every day. Well,
yeah.
I thought I knew. Anyway,
okay.
So with that aside, this Giants defense, the possibilities are endless. I'm sitting here looking at some of the, you know, historical ones, and I'm not comparing them to the great 80s defenses, but let's go back to the 1993 defense, which is arguably one of the best defenses in the history of the franchise. It's not well renowned. However, statistically, it's one of the best ones, and there's no reason why this defense upcoming, it's most certainly going to have a better pass rush than the 1993 defense did. But I'm telling you what, this team has got the athletic potential. The pass rush is, the explosive potential is just, it's terrific. I don't think anybody in this world can disagree with that. And for the fact that ESPN and their embarrassment of a program on Saturday would, you know, erupt in Mount Shadoricus as opposed to Abdul Carter is the most insane thing I have ever heard in my entire life. And matter of fact, pardon me for steamrolling here, the producers of that draft should be considered for termination for that. That was malfeasance, what they did on Saturday. It was unwatchable.
Yeah,
what do you think about that?
Yeah, look, I know they talked a lot of Sanders, and people are giving them flack for quote-unquote disrespecting Cam Ward as the first overall pick. You know, they didn't really do too much of it. They didn't even go to his interview. It was on the stage after he was picked or whatever. And I have a real tough time getting on them after Friday. Certainly like Thursday. I get it. Shador is one of the two top quarterbacks. That's a storyline. Mel Kiper is pounding the table as the best quarterback in the draft. Not many people felt that way, so that's kind of a unique thing. So I get it for a little bit. I thought they went over the top on Thursday about Shador Sanders. 100% agree. 100% agree. But once he's out of the first round, and then on Saturday he's getting through, he starts to become the story. Everybody, I wasn't even watching the draft all that much. I was still fascinated on what happens with Shador. Like, then it got to the third, fourth round, and I'm watching the Giants picks and the Jets picks. Other than that, I'm not that interested in the draft all that much as most people probably are as casual fans. But Shador Sanders was the story. So once you get to where Shador and where he's falling, and the likes of which we have never seen in the NFL draft, I start to have a tougher time complaining about the amount of coverage for Shador Sanders, because that's the story. I thought.
Did you see the ratings?
No, I didn't.
So the first round hit a 5-year high. The one that it is still behind is 2020, when in April of 2020, nobody could
go
anywhere.
Else to watch, yeah.
And we haven't seen him for day 2 and 3 yet, but I would imagine, especially day 3,
yeah,
going to be way higher than
way higher, definitely. I thought Thursday night, way too much of a deal of Shador Sanders, especially early on. Like, I understand it's the story. Like, what are the Giants going to do at 3? Once the trade was made, you knew they came for Jacksonville. You knew Jacksonville came up to take Hunter. And then, like, once Shador passed 3, like, I get it. Now it's just a matter of where he's going to fall. But he shouldn't have been the only aspect of the draft. I agree. Thursday felt like overkill on Shador Sanders. Once he's out of the first round and you start getting through the second, he starts to become the story. So I have less of an issue. Did it become overdone because they did it again? They did it incessantly on Thursday. So, yeah, I get it. I guess it became redundant if you were watching every second of the draft every day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But to me, once he's hit a certain point and he wasn't drafted and he's the only one left, like, he's at the top of everyone's best available, like, and it's Shador Sanders and he's sitting there waiting, then he gets pranked. Like, he's the story. I have less of a time. I have a harder time killing them after Thursday. Thursday, over the top, nothing but Shador. After that, he becomes the story. And I'm not surprised they covered it as much as they did. Eddie in Rockland, real quick. What's up, Eddie?
What's up, Chris? How's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
All right. You know, a couple things. Let me take you down. Since Maris said, you know, he doesn't like switching coaches with a new quarterback, there's probably a good chance, you know, Vegas has Giants with 4 wins.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good chance this organization is going to have to give these guys an extension with 4 losing seasons in a row, right?
Well, it would only
lame duck season for a fifth year.
It would only be 3 losing seasons in a row.
No. If they lose this year, like Vegas says, there would be 4 in a row under Daboll. He started January 22.
Yeah, they had a winning season. They went to the playoffs and won a road playoff game the first year.
Right. Okay. Right. And there's going to be losses after that.
Correct.
Right.
But I'm just saying, 3 losing seasons.
Are they going to be 6-4 months ago, I asked you if you had to give an extension to Daboll right now. Yes or no, you said no.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a good chance,
yes,
on a losing season.
Correct.
That they're going to have to give an extension to Daboll, right?
Correct. Yep. I completely agree. 100%.
And you're with that, right?
I am. Because the good chance, there's certain things that have to happen for it not to be the case.
So,
but if they lose, can I answer the question? You're asking me a question. Before you, like, reinforce the question and ask it 3 different ways to try and word the best way possible.
Here we go. Here's the victim role again.
You know, I'm just trying to talk. No, it's not victim. It's, you know, host, caller. So I'm trying to work on, like, you ask me a question, I'm trying to help you because I want to answer your question. If they lose four games, if Vegas is correct, if they only, win, if they only win four games, if Jackson Dart's going to play under that scenario, there's no doubt. If they win four games, Jackson Dart's going to hit the field. If Jackson Dart hits the field and looks like he doesn't belong and is terrible and is showing no real progression, and everything they hear from within inside the room is that it's not been good, then he might get fired. But if even if they only win four games,
but that goes against Jackson Dart. That goes against everything what Maris said about what he did.
Well, because they'll be in a position to draft another quarterback. They'll be in a position next year with only four victories to be at the top of the draft. They'll have a new coach, a new regime, and they'll be able to draft another quarterback at the top of the draft. If he shows anything, if they believe in him at all, if he plays and he plays well and throws touchdown passes even while losing, then yes, I agree with you. Brian Daboll will get a contract extension despite having three consecutive losing seasons.
Right, and maybe going into the fifth as a lame duck coach, right?
I guess, yeah, however long the extension, probably a 2-year extension. I don't know, whatever it would be, yes.
And as far as the draft, you know, it's fine. It's fine what they took. It's, you know, like I said, you said to me, I didn't say they were going to take a quarterback. I said they would take a quarterback in the second or third round, whatever.
Well, they took him in the first round.
They moved up with those picks. And mm-hmm. they took a quarterback. I said that they wouldn't take a quarterback with the third overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I say first round, not imaginary that if they moved up. My point with this team is that the running back they got is going to get swallowed up alive. The guy's like 5'8". Okay, I know he's a wrecking ball and this mm-hmm. and that, and that's what he is. But if you're going to go running back, you should have addressed that in the second round. Okay.
Yeah, I disagree. They had value in the you might be right about him getting swallowed up. I don't know. There's no guarantee he's going to be successful. But why would you take a running back second overall when you have Tracy there? Like, the reason you take him in the fourth round is because there's value of him in the fourth round. I have other starters I want to address. Well, they didn't have a second round pick, but in the third round they got a defensive tackle. Like, why? I want to address the issues I have. And or get the best player available, not worry about running back. I have a rookie running back, and I can find running backs later in the draft. And in the fourth round, he had immense value, and people like him a lot. I think he has a chance to be really good. Now, you might be right, he might be bad, but I have no taking a running back any earlier than the fourth round when you have a young, talented running back already. It didn't make sense to me. I think the fourth round is the earliest I would have looked to impact the running back room. And I thought the Giants handled it very well.